The Bench. The Bench. On ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1. Presented by Coors Light. Whatever your mountain, climb on. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Like, none of what that guy just said is accurate. Here's Lance Zierlein and Adam Wexler, and Lance is actually in San Jose, California, and he's not even in the studio. Good morning. It's still the Bench. We are here for you, and we actually have a lot of stuff going on today. Wex, it's good to have you in. Is it still fun waking up and making the trip?
It's always fun making the trip. Driving around Houston in zero traffic is the greatest.
Is there really no traffic right now?
Of course there's no traffic. The sun's out. It's a nice day. It's middle of the week. It's great.
It's so sarcastic. Well, you know, everyone says when school's out, they act like there's no traffic at all. They act like Houston becomes a ghost town. I've never necessarily found that to be 100% accurate.
Well, as you know, I'm not quite like you with the number of kids, but I do have a couple of them. So
yeah,
this waking up early stuff is like an everyday thing all year round, whether it's camp time now or time to get up and make some lunches. So it's a breeze.
You're the anti-Dell. Dell, you can sleep or nap all the time. Adam Wexler basically doesn't sleep.
There's
are you
too
still
much,
like that, Wex?
Of course. I mean, are you asking me in a roundabout way, did I stay up till the end of the Astros game?
Yeah, did you do that?
Of course.
And what time did you go to? What time did you wake up?
Oh, I don't know, 4:55-ish.
That's got to be healthy.
5:55 today. I'm sorry. Okay. I got an extra hour in.
You got an extra hour. Well, you saw another win.
Yep.
That's six in a row, and you're seeing the bats. Well, I say the bats are waking up. The bats have clearly, over the last six games, the Astros have scored 7, 5, 7, 4, 8, 6. They're all wins. They're all against lesser competition, and we talked about that being the case after you were done with the Boston series. But the guy that's really, you know, the wrecking crew last night was Evan Gattis, three-run homer, two-run double. He had five RBIs, and he's been the guy that's – he's been swinging a pretty good bat now for – I don't, are we into a month yet, or is it
about
3 weeks?
Oh, yeah, about the last 30 days. I believe J.D. Martinez is the only player who has more homers than Evan Gattis in all of baseball.
Isn't that crazy? I mean, Evan Gattis is, and he's one of those guys that you always talk about, well, I just don't know. You know, at some point in the season, you're going to really have doubts about whether or not Evan Gattis, you can just continue on with Evan Gattis. And it's like this all the time. He always... Look, he's going to have another stretch where he's not very good, but that's how he is, because when he gets hot, he gets red hot. He has always been a streaky player, and you just hope that the streaks happen at whatever the right time happens to be for you, and I think that's happening right now. You have to play, 14 games in a 15-day stretch? This is a long, and you have 10 straight road games, so... They have a chance to make a lot of noise right now. They're off to a 6-0 start after finishing the Red Sox series, but you got plenty of games to go, and it really helps when you have, A, the bats waking up, and then B, you have one of the guys who had been colder earlier in the season is on a tear right now.
Yeah, it just comes down to how you want to look at it is they're going to pile up wins before the All-Star break.
Yeah.
Now, keep that in mind when you start thinking about the big picture. They just went through the Red Sox and the Indians and the Yankees and the teams that are competitors, the teams they're going to see in the postseason. They ended up a game under 500 during that stretch. That's who they're going to see in the playoffs. So keep that in the back of your mind when it comes to the playoffs. And the Astros are rolling in there with 105 wins because they are going to crush teams until the All-Star break. They're going to be in first place at the All-Star break by several games. They might even have the best record in baseball by then because they're playing teams they're just way better than. Basically, Evan Gattis swung the bat a couple times and they won. That's all that happened.
That's all they had to do.
That's all they needed to do, and that's all they had to do against the Rangers. They told Correa, can you go ahead and just hang out for almost a week because of the off day and the 4 days off? He comes back, first pitch he sees, he hits 411 feet, and they're off and running.
So let me ask you this question. What are your thoughts on Lance McCullers? Because Lance McCullers right now he's doing something that he almost never used to do, which is get through a seventh inning. Do you remember when it used to be a miracle for Lance McCullers to make it into the sixth because of the pitch count? He's just changed everything.
Well, he got a big boost from whoever told the Oakland A's about how to attack him last night. On his fourth pitch of the game, he was already facing his fourth batter.
Well, but that's been one of the keys to him, is he's been pitching a contact. He's not trying to make everyone swing and miss on every pitch anymore.
Yeah, he's got tons of movement still. He had a little problem with his control early, and he kept getting into trouble, but kind of weaseling his way out of it after the early innings to spin off those last couple of shutout baseball to get him into the late stages and into the bullpen and into a stage where the game was over. He has gotten better at that. It seems like everything about his pitching game has matured. He had one night where maybe he personally hadn't quite matured, and Jose Altuve kind of took care of that. But yeah, the pitching has definitely matured.
Yeah, and his ability to work off of pitches other than the curveball has been huge. I mean, it used to be you knew that when he got rolling with his curve, he was just like, screw it, I'm not throwing anything but this. And I always thought the key for him was going to be locating fastball. But I do think he's trusted the fastball more. The Fangraphs numbers say he's not throwing the curveball as much, but it's still a pretty high percentage pitch for him. But he's really – I was surprised to see that he's leaned on the change as much as he has.
I think it was a process mentally for him to come around to all that stuff, to the things that, again, these are what's making it work for you. And once he sees that that's happening, pitching into the seventh inning is more important than going five innings with 11 Ks. And he realizes that now.
It is. So we'll have some more Astros stuff for you. Clearly, the Astros are on a little bit of a run. Another big story here is, it's big, but it doesn't take place until 2026, so it's 8 years away.
You have breaking news, Lance, early
in the
AM.
But the breaking news, early in the morning we got this, was that the joint bid between the U.S., Canada, and Mexico has been successful, and they will host the World Cup. And a very unique situation where three countries got together and it geographically made sense. So U.S., Canada, and Mexico are going to host the 2026 World Cup. I think it's huge for a few different reasons. Number one, the longer it takes, the more I think soccer has a chance to continue to strengthen its growth in this country. And it is a process that's happening, but it does take a long time. Soccer's never going to reach the point it needs to reach until the U.S. has a really highly competitive team. And since they didn't qualify for the World Cup, which kicks off officially tomorrow, I'm guessing they may need until 2026 to finally field a competitive team. I shouldn't say that. I think they were competitive last World Cup, obviously. But it needs to be beyond that. We do see that people get excited here in our community, in the country. But the U.S. needs to be one of those teams that not only do they get out of their group, they really need to make some noise beyond that, I think.
Well, let's get into the fun part of voting. Here in America, we have votes for MVPs and awards and things like that and all-star selections, and we almost always dig on the voters. How could you do this? How could he not be unanimous? All that kind of stuff. So we got to do the same here. I hope you agree. The United bid, they won it over Morocco. 134 votes to 65. Seems like an odd number of total voters at 199. That's because there was one other voter who voted for neither host.
Who was that?
I'm digging for that information now. I haven't been able to determine that. I don't think it's quite going to hit the Twitterverse in the same way when somebody doesn't vote for, say, Steph Curry for a unanimous MVP or Nolan Ryan for unanimous enshrinement into the Hall of Fame.
I don't think the one abstaining voter who didn't want any of the options, I don't think that's going to pop up. This is, but it is going to be a big story nationally, bigger than people probably expect it to be. Dell, as somebody who I know I can get a realistic answer, an honest answer about this, how big is this, do you think? It's the first time it's been back in the States since 94, I believe,
yep,
when it was in Los Angeles. So, Dell, how big do you think it is for soccer and soccer fans here in this country?
Well, we're an event country when it comes to things that aren't the three majors here. It depends on what the U.S. is by the time that rolls around. Unfortunately, like you mentioned, there is no U.S. team in the World Cup that starts on Thursday. But the program was stagnant, so they're trying to make sweeping changes. For the first time ever, they're going to have a general manager. We'll see who they actually hire to manage the top flight club or the senior team. It all depends on, do we have a legitimate shot to get to a semifinal or even a quarterfinal by the time that rolls around. No country, I believe, has ever hosted the World Cup and never advanced. We know the U.S. got through and played Brazil in 94. Russia may be a team who doesn't advance. We'll see how they start tomorrow. The U.S. team has to be, by that time, a team people consider at least a threat on their home soil to get to a semifinal before that World Cup means as much as they'd like it to mean. And they've got, what do they have? What were we looking, they have 8 years to figure it out?
Yeah, 8 years to figure it out. How many years have they had to figure it out till now? What's that number at?
20. Well, if you just work off of 94, that's 24 years. Well,
so, I mean, I'm not to rain on my own country's obviously
well, it feels like
soon
a
to be coming
storm is rolling
parade.
In. It feels like a thunderstorm.
I mean, Ernie Stewart's in the mix now. He's going to help them get it done. I mean, they're going to be just another team. Is there any doubt?
Well, missing this World Cup may change things because now it's just going to be about the youth and guys who may use, if they qualify, next World Cup to get ready for a major run. You watch their friendlies against France. France should have won. France is getting ready for the World Cup. They held their own in the aspect of it was tied. Now France controlled that game or match as they rightfully should. Those guys who played in that game and the guys who played in the friendlies before are what you hope will be the bulk of your roster when you're trying to qualify. All the Jose Altidores, get out of my face, Michael Bradley. All those guys should be done. Josie's like 28 or so. He should not be a major part of a World Cup team in 4 years. He'll be 32 years old, and he's not great as it is. The guys who played against France should be a major part of the team that hopefully qualifies in 2022.
Well, so, and the U.S.'s best player is a 19-year-old, which is good. And there's a lot of people who think he has a chance to be a transcendent player for the U.S. I mean, better than a Landon Donovan.
Good, Lance, that we're going to drop one of his names?
What do you mean?
He's going to be a one-namer? How good he is?
Are we just going to call him Christian?
Are we just calling him Christian?
I mean, if he's not that good, then I don't know how good he really is, Lance.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, we could just call him Christian. What other Christians are there?
On the pitch or in the sporting landscape? Not too many after Leitner.
Yeah, in the U.S., not too many. And no one's going to give one name to Leitner. Come on. He doesn't get that. We can't do that. But he'll be 27, I think, whenever the next World Cup rolls. The next time the World Cup is in the States. So he'll still be in good soccer territory. I mean, it's he may be on the
he'll be in his prime.
Will he be prime?
He's 27 years old. I mean, soccer young man's game clearly, but 27 years old, he'll be in his prime. That'll be his second, hopefully, World Cup. Unfortunately, we miss out on him doing it as a teenager, but that should be right where the U.S. would want him to be in his development. Hopefully, he's still playing for a major club. God forbid he's back here playing in the MLS. No shot. Well, it is a shot at the MLS, but our best player should not be playing here currently, and he's not. He's playing in Germany.
Yeah.
If maybe he moves to even a bigger club, and hopefully that's the case where he's playing on a bigger world stage. If he's the guy, he should be playing at one of the top clubs in the world, whether it be Real or Barcelona or Manchester United, something like that, if he's going to be our guy.
Well, he'll be in his prime, and you can be in your prime when you're at Prime Social. Ooh, boom, still got it. Prime Social allows you to be in your prime every single time you're sitting at the card table. At our tournament last Friday, you know, I got to the final table, I finished 10th, so I was right on the edge. But that's only because the blinds got high and I had to go all in and I got beat on. We both had ace 10 on an all in, but he caught a flush with his ace 10. That was a disappointing way to go out. But I did go out and I still got to the money, won $200, was very happy with that. You can go and play in tournaments every single day. Today's tournament starts at noon. Today is actually Pot Limit Omaha, so if you're an Omaha player, it's like having a bingo card basically. Roll on in and go play. Every single day during the weekday, they have a tournament waiting for you at noon. They also have cash games going on all the time because it starts at Thursday and it lasts until Sunday where they're open 24 hours a day. When I came in to do the broadcast on Friday morning, there was a table with guys who had been playing poker there from midnight or in some cases 3 a.m., 4 a.m., they came in before their shift, after their shift. They just came in because they don't go to sleep. But you can get some action at Prime Social, and there are some regular average Joes just like us playing as well. It's not a bunch of sharks in there, I'm telling you. Go to PrimeSocialTX.com for more information on everything they have in place. But right now, if you are looking for a great poker game with beautiful amenities, great food, great staff, a bar for you, and a beautiful location, they've got you at 7801 Westheimer, just west of Hillcroft. And stop in and play your poker right there at Prime.
Is The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and Sportsmap 94.1. Presented by Coors Light. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
I'm live here in San Jose, sitting in my Spring Hill suites. I don't know that it's really a suite necessarily if they just put a desk in here. This doesn't feel like
you didn't take it out to the balcony.
No, they've got a, you know why it's a suite? They've got a couch here. So since there's a couch from about 1987.
Probably gotten the amount of use like it's from 1978.
Yeah, I don't want to know what's on that.
But you already know what's on that.
On that couch. I don't need to know anything.
You've watched television. You know what's on that couch.
I've watched computers. Watch computers and televisions, and I know what's on the couch. Yes, and that's why I'm not going to hear any ding, ding, and they're going to come in here. You know, Ice-T is going to walk in. If it appears as though the perp was on this couch. Oh, no. I don't need the perp on my couch.
San Jose is a pretty safe place. You're good.
Yeah, it's, you know what? I'm staying not very far from, I didn't realize this. I went to meet these guys for dinner. Wasn't a very far drive, and I was right there at Levi Stadium where the 49ers play. It's not that far away from where the Niners, and you know what they have right across the street? They have like a bunch of restaurants, and I think they own that property. So they rent out the space. So they, not only do they capture all the dollars, you know, for people going to the 49ers games, but they also capture, a bunch of rental prices for these restaurants that are right across the way, basically on site. It's a pretty cool little setup they've got here, but
is there a Jimmy G's Italian eatery there yet?
Not yet, but there will be. Not yet, but there will be. It's always nice to come in, play a few games, and then become the highest paid quarterback in the NFL, at least for a short time.
Earned it all the way.
Did you guys see what happened with Reggie Bush?
He earned it.
I guess he earned it. I don't know. Reggie Bush, the Los Angeles Rams were ordered to pay Reggie Bush, former running back, NFL running back Reggie Bush, $12.45 million in damages for a knee injury he suffered in St. Louis in 2015. Bush was playing for the 49ers, ran out of bounds on a punt return in the game, and he slipped on the concrete. He suffered a torn lateral meniscus. I'm very happy with the verdict, Bush told the Post-Dispatch. The people spoke and decided very fairly. Attorneys for the Rams said they plan to file a motion for a new trial. The team declined comment on the verdict. He filed suit in 2016, alleged that the Rams and the public stadium authorities allowed a dangerous condition to exist at the Dome. In Bush's suit, they called the area where he fell a, quote, a concrete ring of death, which sounds a little more dangerous than a torn meniscus, if I'm being honest. But is he wrong? Like, if you fall and slip and have an injury that you have to miss part of your season or a substantial part of your season, that can have an impact on your earnings. I don't think he was wrong for filing that lawsuit.
I would say it had an impact on his earnings.
Yeah. I mean, clearly it did. He was done shortly thereafter.
Right.
So, I think I was surprised. I heard somebody yesterday say they thought it was bull that Reggie, this is somebody in football, say that they thought that, that far off of the field, the player should be responsible. I'm just thinking, I don't know. If you have that instance where a player could slip, fall, and injure himself, you probably need to take care of that just in case, even if you don't think it's going to happen.
I believe, if I'm accurate, his actual career yardage total following that injury went down because he played for the Bills after that, and his total yards rushing for the Bills was in the negative.
I don't even remember the Bills time. I swear to you, I didn't even remember even.
But think about all the football you've watched, and I know with your clicker you don't get very far because once the ball is snapped and the offensive linemen move 3 inches to the left and right, you're pretty much done with the play. But there are some plays that extend beyond that.
Yeah.
There we've seen, I mean, I don't even want to get to the U of H receiver story, but there have been so many times in an NFL game, guys go crashing into the sidelines. Usually it's when an older gentleman in a striped uniform gets run over, or Wade Phillips, that we think somebody's going to get hurt. But I'm surprised instances, not necessarily catastrophic injuries, but injuries on the sidelines seem like they're right there for the happening.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised, too, that we don't see it anymore. We don't see that more. And why? I don't know why that is, but especially when you see guys come running out of bounds after the play, and every once in a while we'll see somebody get pummeled on the sideline. It's usually a cameraman or camera woman who just gets obliterated. And then we're watching it. A lot of times it seems like it happens on college football more than pro. And then, you know, somebody will make a comment about it, and then they want to, you know, there's that decision where I have to stick around because I'm like, oh, I need to see if they're going to go back and show that person.
So you said it seems to happen more in college and pro. Do you think this is an accurate summation of why there are more people on the college football sidelines that have no reason to be there and no idea what's going on around them than at a pro game? Just random people, fans, friends of people who are associated with the team, you know, even, you know, watch some of these college football games, especially at the end of a game. I think we've now started on Twitter watching the highlights of these great game-winning 30-yard touchdown receptions in the corner of the end zone just to see the surroundings. Because there's all these college kids over there screaming and yelling and jumping up and down and likes to fight guys. Seems like he's made it down to the sidelines in some of these games as well.
It's pretty crazy. So in college, it's interesting you say that because in pros, it doesn't really happen. Like, you're not getting on the field of a pro game.
Right.
But in college, I was watching – I remember I was watching a tape for Tariq Cohen, the running back from the Chicago Bears. He went to North Carolina A&T. And after he scored a touchdown one time, like seven fraternity members ran on the field and started throwing up Q dogs. They started throwing up the Q sign, and I'm like, how are there? And it's just the end zone. I don't know if it was some type of – I don't know if it was an alumni thing where these members of this fraternity were all there for that weekend. But it was like people ran into the end zone to go celebrate with them, just regular people on the sideline. I'm thinking, wait a minute, this isn't – how is this going on?
But it is
no
exciting.
Security, nothing. Oh, yeah, it was – well, trust me, I just kept searching back with my clicker like, where'd this guy come from? How is this happening? And they were just throwing up the Q-dog signs whenever he scored a touchdown, and then I saw him one other time as well. But, yeah, you are right. There are a lot more people on the field of on the sideline of a college game. Not only are there more players – but there also are just more random people. You got, you know, Matthew McConaughey sitting there. Oh, look, it's Matthew McConaughey. Oh, there's Roger Clemens on the sideline of that game. Oh, there's this guy. There's that guy. But I'm talking about it's usually the cameraman who's trying to hold tight for their shot that gets just pummeled. They're the ones that get pummeled the hardest.
No question. But $12.45 million seems like a good return, although, again, as usual, most cases like this, it'll be stuck in appeal, at least for a little bit. We'll see if that ends up being the final tally.
See, Christian Hackenberg got cut.
Shocking.
He sucked. I remember watching him. I was so terrified Bill O'Brien was going to draft him. I mean, it was a daily nightmare. And when I was doing the show over on the other station, I had Michael Connor record me. I said what the date was, and I said, "This is. I just want to get it on record that I believe Bill O'Brien is going to draft Christian Hackenberg, and he absolutely sucks."
Was the fear that he was going to draft him and they would waste the pick, or the fear that he was going to draft him and work his butt off to try to make everybody believe that he was good and put time and effort into it?
It was both, Wex. It was the whole thing. You could watch tape. You didn't have to watch tape. Just watch games. Just watch two games. I don't care. Any two games. And then the excuse makers would say, "Well, but his freshman season when he was with Bill O'Brien, look, I don't care what he did 3 years ago. That guy can't hit the broadside of a barn. He was so wildly inaccurate. You know, when watching him for the draft, There was no way he was a first-round pick. There was just no way he was a first-round pick. And I was so terrified that Bill O'Brien was going to just pass up on quarterback and just make a decision to go with, you know, Christian Hackenberg. Now, luckily, that didn't happen. But Hackenberg's already out of the league. I mean, he was terrible.
Well, just for fun then, Lance, where would he be on the depth chart right now? I think Watson is one. I'm going to go with Whedon at two. Now, I'm a little torn now with the final three if you add Hackenberg. You got Joe Webb, you got Stephen Morris, and if Hackenberg was here, would he slot in fifth for you?
Yeah, he's behind Stephen Morris. Stephen Morris actually had some time with the Colts. You got Webb
in their uniform
actually,
at their facility. Yeah,
he did. I'll take it. Well, he was out in practice. I guess I'm counting because I saw him in practice. Yeah.
Practice.
Hey, leave the former Miami Hurricane alone.
He's stunk, you know it.
He's
both
played
your
for
last
several
two guys.
Teams. If you want to say played, he's put on the uniform and has had access cards to multiple NFL facilities.
They were more in the building.
Yeah.
Who are you more excited? Tell the truth here. Who are you more proud of, Dell? Brad Kaya or Stephen Morris? Huh. Your last two Miami quarterbacks.
Let's think. Brad Kaya never led a comeback. If his team trailed at halftime, Miami never won. And he's an Al Golden quarterback, so that completely removes him from the list, even though Stephen Morris is too. But Stephen Morris actually has halftime deficit comebacks on his resume. They both lost every game to Florida State. I can't take Brad Kaya. I can't do it. If you can't even come back against Georgia Tech when you're trailing at half, I can't trust you.
Brad Kaya or Christian Hackenberg?
Brad Kaya.
Exactly.
He could operate in the pocket at least. Christian Hackenberg is terrible.
Basically, you're asking Dell, competent or Christian Hackenberg?
Yeah, that's the game we're playing.
It's exactly what I'm asking you. You got to be competent. You got to be competent with your taxes. If you're not, you can end up in debt, in serious debt, and the IRS can audit you. But don't worry. If you get audited by the IRS, you've got a phone number, 713-422-2225, because Top Tax Defenders is going to jump into the audit for you, and they will scour everything. And they understand the laws as well. So when it comes to the tax code and the tax laws, they are there to take care of your best interests, and they will go through what you owe, and it could be usually, if you're going to call Top Tax Defenders, you owe $10,000 or more. There are plenty of people who will catch a $30,000 bill, $40,000. Maybe you have a business that has a $170,000 bill or higher. They work to negotiate and reduce those bills for you, and they do a phenomenal job. It's hard to do it for yourself if you don't know the people on the other side, if you don't have a background or a history of doing deals and lowering rates, or if you don't know what the laws are. They're the ones who are able to pick apart the law and say, wait a minute, no, this is inaccurate right here, what you're charging my customer. In fact, they had a client who owed 60-some-odd $1,000, and they got that not only reduced, it turned out to be plus $1,500 the other way because the IRS had a big mistake on their side, and the client hadn't been claiming everything they needed to claim. So this is why I'm saying you have to have this phone number for audits or for tax bills over $10,000 because they will get those W's for you. TopTaxDefenders.com or call 713-422-2225. What do you leave without?
No. This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1. Presented by Coors Light. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
I'm neither of those two. John's off drinking Coors Light someplace. But let's not talk about him right now. I'm on this edition of The Name Game. We're giving you a chance to win something pretty cool. It's a gift certificate to send your kid to one of King Daddy Sports week-long tennis camps. So if your kids like tennis, hopefully they're not like Ken Hoffman. But you can pick the week. Camp is open to kids ages 5 to 16 and located at Memorial High School at Echo Lane and I-10. King Daddy Sports week-long tennis camp. Get your kids out of your hair for a week. Continue to listen throughout the day for your chance to win. That's your clue that we're not doing it on this show. But at some point throughout the day, you got a shot. Now back to Lance and Adam Wexler.
So you got that going on for you. We are expecting to have Chris Canetti on at 8:18. And talk a little bit more about the World Cup. If you haven't heard, The U.S., Mexico, and Canada had a joint bid for the World Cup in 2026, and it was successful. Just went came down this morning. There's a good chance that Houston is going because they're a venue who that has hosted international soccer. I was at the Man City Man U game. First of all, Dell, this might surprise you to learn this, but I was at 2006 when it was Ronaldinho and FC Barcelona came to town to play Club America from Mexico.
Why would that surprise me? I know.
Well, you just wouldn't have thought that I would go to an international soccer friendly in 2006. You just didn't see that coming,
no,
Dell. Don't worry about it.
Now you're kind of a star effer, so I figure if there are major stars in attendance, you would show up. I'm not surprised at all.
Yeah, well, it was Ronaldinho who at that time was considered the greatest player in the world, or well, some people considered him that. He was a fancy boy with the ball. So anyway, I was blown away that there were 72,000 people there. I was blown away by all the tailgating there. So then when I went to Man City Man U this year, well, also went to Argentina versus the U.S. in CONCACAF, which was just – it was a stark reminder of how far away the U.S. was from being a real player on the international circuit. I mean, way, way off. And then Man City Man U, the friendly that went down last summer, was also really cool to go to that and see people there. So there is the venue there. We have hosted major events before, like Super Bowls, All-Star Games, yada, yada, World Series. Well, not just World Series, but, you know, we're a bunch of
people. They won the bid
to
host the World Series last year.
They won the bid, and they're hoping to get the votes needed to win the bid again this year. They may need another reliever to win that bid this year. We'll see. They may need a closer. Although, Dell, as you reminded me, what's Ken Giles up to now?
Perfect.
Perfection looks like this, 11 for 11, Adam. That's what perfection looks like.
Yes, run squeezed across in the eighth inning with Colin McHugh on the bump to put Giles in a situation where he could come in the ninth inning with a three-run lead and close out another Astros W, which he did last night, 6-3, the final, behind Lance McCullers, seven innings, and Evan Gattis's five RBI game, cleared the bases with a double, put a couple of runners on the pay station with a homer, including himself, obviously. I mentioned earlier there was only one player that had more homers than he did over the last 30 days. There's actually five, but he is second in RBIs in the majors in the last 30 days with 25 RBIs. More than half of his hits are for extra bases, of course. He's only hitting 270 during that time. But he's coming up with big hits, and they're going a long way when he hits it.
No doubt. They're going, yeah, he's crushing the ball right now. I'm looking at Lance McCullers. You know, Lance got off to some really dominant starts, at least two of his first four starts. Well, there was one that was really bad, but he had an 11-strikeout, one-walk game. His first game was a 10-strikeout, one-walk game. But since that time, his strikeout numbers to walk numbers have come down a little bit. Not quite as dominant as we're used to with Lance. Yesterday, for example, 5 strikeouts, 3 walks. The game before that, 4-2. But I think it's because he just really is trying to pitch like a pro. Like he just wants a veteran approach, and it's really serving him well. You know, he's actually gone 7 innings or more fewer times than I had anticipated since April 28th. 1, 2, 3, 4 different times. But it doesn't feel like the same grind for Lance McCullers that it once did. Am I wrong there?
No, it doesn't at all feel like that. The bottom line is he's put the team with a better chance to – I mean, you realize you're talking about 7 innings. Him going 6 full is a step forward from last year. And that's how much different I think he's become. I mean, he still, I think, works the count a little bit too much. And I don't really think that's his intention. I think that's the nature of the movement on his pitches. There's a lot of guys that at some point are just, they're taking his pitches because even if they swing at it, they can't do anything with it. And he's not in a 2-strike count when he's throwing a lot of these pitches. He's had at least 2 walks in every start since the end of April. But he's also put the team in position to win almost every single time he's been out there. He had that blow-up game against Cleveland, that blow-up game against Minnesota. Every other game he's pitched this year, he's given up 3 earned runs or fewer and pitched them into at least the fifth inning, and most of these times into the seventh. He might not have gone out there for the seventh, but that's what you're looking for out of a starter. On this staff, that's at the bottom of the rotation.
9 of 11, he's gone into or through the sixth inning, nine of his last 11. So that's a big bump for him. We haven't seen that. And last year, the bullpen was raggedy by the end of the season because they were used so much because you just were trying to piecemeal so much of the season together, especially with the injuries to McCullers and Keuchel. But that's not really, you know, that's not the case this year. You've got a couple of heavy innings guys and Gerrit Cole, though that's come back lately. But Justin Verlander, McCullers is going a little bit deeper. Charlie Morton, you know, will give you some solid innings count.
As long as he's professional about it, not embarrassing like he was in his last start by his own admission.
How did you feel about Keuchel's comments? You brought that up. So Keuchel, he says, and then a stat came out. Richard Justice had this stat cast, talked about how many balls that were hit that were not hard hit balls for Dallas Keuchel. It's 13 hits and 4 1/3. I don't care how many are not hit hard and find the gap and find the holes. This has become an issue where over the last five games, it has been an issue where Dallas Keuchel's just not on his game right now.
Well, the bottom line with all those numbers, and there's merit to it, and there's merit in even what Dallas Keuchel had to say. The bottom line is, if you didn't already know it, and you should have, you have to realize it now. This is a guy who's not a swing and miss guy, and that just becomes difficult to have incredibly good consistency over the course of a season. That's why his Cy Young Award is amazing. It's almost unheard of in this day and age to have a pitcher like that be that successful for that long a period of time when he's not, where guys are not that far off balance when they don't know what's coming, or even when they do know what's coming, they can't hit it anyway because his stuff is so good. His stuff is clearly the worst in this rotation. And quite honestly, it's not even close. Because everybody else's stuff is either moving all over the place or popping the catcher's mitt at 98 miles an hour. He doesn't have that. He's never had that. He's never needed it to get guys out. But you can't go out there and give up more hits than innings pitched in five consecutive starts and consider yourself unlucky five consecutive times out to the mound.
Exactly. See, Wex just says it better than me, guys. Everything Wex just said is what I was pretty much trying to say what I was thinking.
41 hits allowed in his last five starts.
Yeah, that's not good.
And again, no, he's had a little bit of the home run issue cleared up. He's only given up four homers in those five starts where it's 12 for the season. So he's right when he says these ground balls and not hard hit ball. That's correct. It's happening. But unless they're going to add more infielders, some of those 13 ground ball hits are going to find holes.
He said 11 shouldn't have been hits. You can't say things like that. Well, there should have been 11 of them should have been outs. Like, don't ever say out loud that your hit total is over
but
double
digits. You also can't come out after, more often than not, you're probably not going to come out after a game, unless it's like a Morton game, where he clearly was all over the place, where he hit four guys and walked another six.
Yeah.
You might come out and say, I didn't have it tonight. Dallas Keuchel, when he's coming out of, I can almost understand that I'm not going to go out there and act like I don't have it and tell people I stink and admit that I'm no good. There's a little bit of pride there to it all.
No, and there's some swagger, and I get that, and I like that, And he can't mentally, you know, the worst thing would be if Dallas Keuchel got inside his own head mentally, which he may already be there and may just not be saying it. But you don't want a guy to lose confidence and start to second guess himself and start to get down on himself. You don't want that. So I understand that if that's the case. And this has been a guy who was phenomenal in the beginning of 17 and was phenomenal in early part of throughout 2015. But he was not good in 2016. He was very average the back end of 2017 when he came back from injury. And he hasn't really been consistent this year. So, you know, it's one of those things where, and we have always known this, this has never been a surprise that he's got to be pinpoint with his placement. I think the interesting guy is Charlie Morton, because the way Charlie Morton looked at the end of last year and the way he started to look this year, it made you start saying, maybe this guy's getting ready to take that step and he's going to. But we saw, this is why Charlie Morton is a back end of the rotation guy. He'll have outings like this. We got to break it right here. You are listening to The Bench. When we come back, we'll start getting your phone calls. If you guys want to jump in on any of this, 713-780-3776. And there was an event where there may have been more alcohol than at John Granato's daughter's wedding in New Orleans the weekend before. We'll break down the tale of the tape when we come back.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and Sportsmap 94.1. Presented by Coors Light. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Lance Zierlein and Adam Wexler instead with you today. With Dell doing his thing. Dell, Golden State Warriors. $500,000 bill for alcohol on their big parade yesterday. So I'm here. This is about 40 minutes from the parade site where I am currently in San Jose. And so there's some, you know, it was on TV. They were watching a parade throughout the day. It started in the morning. Mr. Fab. Who's Mr. Fab? Who's Mr. Fab? The rapper. Do you know Mr. Fab?
I do not.
I do not either. I did see E-40, but Mr. Fab, who is... I don't know if he's a rapper or maybe a radio personality in the Bay Area. He was one of the guys who was on the TV kind of as a commentator. And they were talking about, you know, you just never know if this is going to be the last parade. You never know if this is the last parade, Mr. Fab. So they've got to have as much fun as they possibly can here. And I'm like, well, I mean – you know, you got a pretty good run going. Sorry that you don't know how many more parades you're going to have for an NBA championship. But if you get Anthony Davis, like supposedly the Warriors are eyeing Anthony Davis, you might be able to lock in three or four more.
Yeah, a lot of things happened. Even with that big, huge bill for alcohol, somehow Jordan Bell ran out of Hennessy and he got some from the crowd. And there was Nick Young, Swaggy P rolling through the crowd in his robe. All that good stuff happened. But we did have some pretty good, awkward moments between management and Durant for absolutely no reason at all. They decided to make it awkward by making comments about how long he's going to be in Golden State. You caught that, right?
No, I was working all yesterday. What did they say?
Okay, so they've got their play-by-play guy, as usual. One of the, you know, TV or radio play-by-play guy usually is the MC of their onstage speeches and commentary, and let's say stuff the crowd is going to stand and cheer at all the time. And they, of course, did that. So one of the things that that guy, Bob Fitzgerald, did on his own after some of the comments, just your typical stuff's being said, he says, as they're getting ready to let some people talk, and he's got to kind of find a place on stage while other people are talking, goes, I'm going to go ahead and stand in front of KD. You know, before his Warriors exit, I want to enjoy as much of time with him as possible. That made
what?
Everybody kind of cringe a little bit. And I believe that comment came after he was talking with Steve Kerr and Bob Myers, their GM, both had mics. So he was talking with them, and he said, you know, Bob, I know you said the other day Kevin can have whatever he wants. You know, there won't be any negotiation. He'll whatever he wants, he can have. And Myers responded, ah, that was just for the media. He can't have anything he wants. Good laugh. That was total normal stuff. Steve Kerr chimes in and says, ah, mid-level. Good laughs. Not awkward yet. Then Fitzgerald says, well, last year you told Steph he could have whatever contract he wants, too. And Meyer says, well, that was different. He's been here since the way before days. He's earned it.
Wow.
And then
way to go.
There's more. Dell has more.
And then Fitzgerald chimed in, and there ended the Warriors' cohesion right there. Mitch Richmond gave you guys the blueprint when he goes, congratulations to the Western Conference champion, Golden State Warriors, and Kevin Durant. This is a thing. This is a thing for whatever reason. It's awkward for...
Even in the Bay Area?
It's just awkward for him. I don't know what it is.
So is this really more our problem rather than their problem? Or are we... Is this a bit of a... Is this different than what we had yesterday within one team on the West Coast with their supposed infighting? You know, Lonzo's diss track to Kyle Kuzma equals... Bob Myers' diss to Kevin Durant? It's all big nothing?
Well, let's compare it.
Is it the same? Is it different?
Did Bob Myers just suggest that Kevin Durant's dad wasn't around?
Like, I don't think he said
like
that.
Like Lonzo Ball did to Kyle Kuzma in a rap song?
Diss track. You can't not put it in there if you're going to release a diss track, right?
You got to mention, well, considering what Pusha did to Drake, you've got to put something about a lack of family cohesion in your diss track.
tell people about what's going on there, because this is this real, by the way? So this came out yesterday. They had the story about Lonzo Ball. You don't usually see, okay, usually basketball players don't throw diss tracks at each other.
Well,
they'll just tweet or subtweet.
Or normally what they'll do, and this is a great one to get back at a teammate, they'll fill their car with popcorn. It is awesome chemistry building stuff. Very much different than a diss track.
Yeah, the diss track feels a little more aggressive nowadays. Well, never underestimate popcorn in a car. That's a pretty aggressive move, too. It takes a long time to get out, and especially if it was buttered popcorn. But you literally have two teammates, and Lonzo Ball has a diss track on Kyle Kuzma. This can't be what the Lakers wanted.
It's definitely not what the Lakers wanted. And today is Wednesday, and this was released on Monday. And Wednesday, according to the comments on Lowe's Instagram page from one Kyle Kuzma, today's the day he's going to kick his backside. That's what Kyle posted on his page. Now, we're only at the stage where we can guess what he means. Does he mean he's going to outscore him in a game of highly intense one-on-one during the offseason? Or he's coming with brass knuckles?
Well, this has got to be. Is this just some kind of fun and games that they're having? Lonzo Ball doesn't strike me as a guy that would start trouble with guys on his team.
Take a listen.
No, he doesn't.
Take a listen, Lance. See if you find this serious or just joking.
This is the radio version?
Yes.
You let them gas you up, thinking that you can't be touched. Coming from the outskirts of Flint, boy, you ain't tough. Big baller brand, getting brand. Look who's just getting crumbs. We thumbing through that money. Look at y'all, y'all playing with your thumbs. Don't know who your daddy is. Well, your ass is getting some.
Ooh, my goodness. None of that sounded friendly. That was not one bit of that was friendly. Not you don't know who your daddy is first of all, that can turn into a scrap right there. But even before that was not like friendly joking stuff.
Think about if all that was just, and clear, I'm guessing it's all been said, you probably wouldn't usually hear that inside your own locker room amongst each other. That was never made public unless we all heard about it because they got in a fist fight.
Wow. I'm really surprised. What is Dell? Do we know what's gone on to precipitate this?
Kyle Kuzma had, if you remember the Chappelle show and the player hated his ball, Kyle Kuzma pretended to be Silky Johnson and started ripping Alonzo. So this has been going on, and apparently the Lakers franchise was okay with it until you make a song telling everyone that one of your teammates doesn't know who his father is. Then it becomes an issue apparently for everybody.
Well, now, I mean, what could possibly go wrong with drafting Lonzo Ball? What could possibly you didn't heed the concerns with? And by the way, LaVar Ball's already starting to chirp about he doesn't want Paul George going to the Lakers, and that could take up Lonzo's spot. And I mean, they're gonna find they're if they haven't already figured it out, Lonzo Ball is not going to be worth it. He's not going to be a good enough player to be worth the hassle. But I really am surprised. There must be something really nasty going on for him to put something out there in public about a teammate. This is the same team, of course, that had what's his name that put Swaggy P on blast with the secret record. Jordan Clarkson with the recorded video.
They also had Kontavious Caldwell-Pope for a stretch of games where he couldn't leave the state to play. He could leave the facility where he was being held for practice and games in California. But any game outside of California, he had to stay back. So
that GPS tracking is a real thing now.
That's also the team that now somehow has risen to the top of the Vegas odds board to land King James.
They have. And they came. And Dell and I talked about it the other day. I don't know where that came from because they had been at like number four, number five. And did you guys see where Gary Payton was on some type of show? And he basically said, yeah, LeBron's going to L.A.,
committed to a private school out in L.A., which I think led everyone down that path.
Oh, and that's not the only thing if you're a Houston fan and you're looking at LeBron. Apparently, whoever Marla Rittenour is, she's of the Akron Beacon Journal, she told ESPN L.A., I heard this from his own lips when we were in Houston this season. He does not like Houston as a city, so that would require him moving to a place that he's not crazy about. So according to her, LeBron told her, I don't like Houston.
Oh, then it's a wrap.
Yeah, I went back and listened to that conversation, and the guys there kind of, I don't think they really realized it from a Houston standpoint. They were too worried about the L.A. aspect of it, and the conversation immediately went to, because she was talking about the bad things and, you know, traffic, and you can't go outside because it's so hot. She said, it's kind of like L.A., and they freaked out and said, whoa, no, that's not like L.A. at all. She goes, oh, but I mean without all the good stuff. So she, in addition to saying that about Houston being a city LeBron didn't like, she made sure to know that it was also a city she didn't like.
Yeah, well, I don't care about her, honestly. I hope Marla Rittenour or whoever never comes to Houston. I'm going to be honest with you. I hope she never writes.
It's not a package deal?
Nope. But, hey, L.A.'s weather's much nicer. Their traffic is worse. Their state income tax is a gouge factory. And let's...
I mean, does it really matter if he lives in Houston? Is he not going to get the role in Trainwreck 2 if he moves to Houston, but he will get it if he moves to L.A.?
He'll get the role. Listen, LeBron, the state income tax is going to take so much of your money there, you're going to find yourself broke by the end of this contract. You have got to just stay
broke?
In Houston where you can keep more money. Yeah, because you could be broke. You could be broke.
I can't wait to read Darren Ravel's tweets about LeBron going broke. They're going to be awesome.
I think this I'm whooping your ass on Wednesday is a real thing, by the way, by Kyle Kuzma. The song's called Kylie Kuzma. Kylie Kuzma. And Kuzma said, no push a T, no comeback. I'm whooping your ass Wednesday. Today's Wednesday. We'll see what happens.